concept of lean is the idea of eliminating waste. Unfortunately, what happened was, as that was promulgated through the industry, it became about the process of eliminating waste instead of about creating a culture of waste elimination.
Welcome to the Just In Time Cafe, Go Lean Six Sigma.com's official podcast, where we help you build your problem-solving muscles. We share best practices from over 20 years of success, helping organizations from the Fortune 500 to small and medium-sized business to government achieve their goals using Lean Six Sigma.
Well, hello, JC.
Hey, Elizabeth, are you keeping warm these days?
You know, February, it's a little chillier in the island, so we're still going to need some nice warm coffee.
Yay, good. And I have a few blankets, too, because, you know, we do have thin blood.
How about I meet you in the conference room where you can get a little quiet and then talk about what's on the menu?
Sounds good. See you in a bit. So, Elizabeth, what's on the menu today?
I'm glad you're asking, Tracy. I am totally psyched about today's menu. It's good. It's a very good one. Today's appetizer, we're going to find out how tomatoes make you more productive. I know that sounds weird, Tracy, but we're going to find that out. On today's bulletin board, we're going to discuss how lean went meta at a manufacturing plant. We're going to find out how, we're going to go to Cape Cod and find out how even kids benefit from Lean Six Sigma. And then tools of the trade, we're going to discuss a new lean book that takes a lesson from the famous chef Julia Child. And then today's Q&A leads us into some classic sports analogies. And then finally for today's special, we're going to find out how a lean practitioner finds joy.
Well, that's important. Joy in our work is very important. So tell me, Elizabeth, I'm a little curious, what the heck do tomatoes have to do with productivity?
Good question, Tracy. So this is interesting. I found this reference to this in a book about productivity, and this is an app called the Tomato Timer, and it's online. It's free. It's tomato-timer.com, and it was created to support something called the Pomodoro technique, and I think you can get the connection between tomato, Pomodoro. This was developed in the 80s. By Francesco Cirillo, and he named it after the tomato-shaped kitchen timer. So the technique, if I can paraphrase, you decide on a task you have to get done. For our process improvement people, maybe the task is something like, you know, brainstorm voice of the customer. You know, what are your customers saying? You set the timer. Now, the default at Tomato Timer is 25 minutes, and that's, they call that a Pomodoro, right? That little 25-minute task time, that's one Pomodoro. Huh. And I use it to create this agenda, Tracy. So I practiced with the tomato timer today. So you do that. You set the timer, and then you work on the task until the timer rings, right? And if during that time you were tempted to do something else, like at one point I was like, you know what? I think I'll make some tea. It said, nope, don't go do it. Just write down what your little distraction idea was. And keep working until it rings. And then you put a check mark on a piece of paper. And if you have less than four check marks, right, you've done fewer than four Pomodoros, then you get a 3 to 5 minute break. That's a short break. And there's a little short break button on the tomato timer. And then if you've done four of them, it's time for you to get a longer break. That's 15 to 20 minutes. So after four more Pomodoros, you get a long break and you hit the other button. And this is just a great way to incorporate body breaks. Have you heard that expression that sitting is the new smoking? Have you heard that?
Yes, I have. I teach my kids that every day.
Yeah, so you got to get up. And a lot of people set timers. And this is a technique that goes a little deeper. So it's timers. It's telling you to get up, telling you to go take a break. So you got that improved blood flow. But it also improves your focus. It stops you from being externally disrupted. Which, you know, is that and introduces waste into your process. So it really stopped me from, you know, sort of losing track and checking email or answering a phone call. And I really stayed with my task today. And I was actually pretty impressed. You know, I've I've already adopted the technique of turning off email, which is a distraction. So now I just give it a 25-minute Pomodoro.
Yeah, that's a great technique. I think it's so easy to get distracted these days with, you know, an email popping up on your window or, you know, a text popping into your phone. I think it is harder today to stay focused than it was in the past.
Yeah.
So I think that's a great tool to help people get focus again.
Yeah. And I think you're right. This is a modern solution to a modern plague, which is distractions. So it is the perfect thing.
And I love the fact that they've brought in some history around the way they call it, the tomato timer. So that's really cute.
It is. It's got a little picture of the tomato timer right in the corner when you go get it. So tomato timer, I highly recommend it. I think I'm hooked. I think I'm going to keep using it. All right,
cool.
Tracy. So next up is our bulletin board. Tracy, tell me, how did Lean go meta in terms of cleaning up?
So this was an interesting article that came up in our Lean Six Sigma news. I think I'm hungry. I think I might need to order some pasta.
Okay, we'll take care of you.
All that Pomodoro talk and that tomato talk. I'm a little hungry now.
I'll tell the kitchen. You're good.
All right. Have them bring the lunch menu over. So this is really about an article about using lean principles to make your plant cleaner and more efficient. And I really like this article because it gives you a little history about lean and how it was founded and where it came from. It tells you a little bit more about what lean is and what it's not and how that can help, obviously, people apply it. And it talks a little bit more about the pursuit of perfection and lean being a war on waste. So it gives you a little bit of insight. And then it moves into, have you leaned your cleaning? And what can we do to make it lean? And it's really talking specifically about the 5S principles,
right,
with cleaning, with shine being, you know, one of the steps, but also the 5 steps for workplace organization and how a lot of these organizations on the surface look like they're implementing 5S, but when you peel the layers back a little bit more, looks like they could be doing a little bit better. So he talks about this case study about how on the surface it looked as though they were implementing 5S, but upon closer scrutiny, some of the SOPs were dated 2003 for some of the cleaning, and the schedule was outdated as well. So that was an issue. And when they looked in the closets, they were disorganized. They didn't have anything in any particular place. And so they were really spending some time, you know, revisiting this concept and making sure. And it's, I guess, the fourth and fifth steps for 5S, which is standardize and sustain. And I think those are the pieces that really get lost in 5S sometimes, is we do a really good job of sorting, setting in order, and then shining, but then we don't put into place the fourth and fifth steps that really keep this lean in the long term.
Yeah.
So interesting discussion around some of that application. And I know I struggle with this too, honestly. I 5S my garage all the time, and I shouldn't be. I should be just doing 4 and 5, not 1, 2, and 3 all the time. But with a busy family, it gets really hard to, you know, get in there and do some of this upkeep. And so I can really appreciate how in a work environment, it could take a lot of time and a lot of fine tuning with standardized sustain.
Yeah. In terms of 5S in the home, Tracy, you just need to train your kids on Lean Six Sigma. I know they're young, but get them going.
True. Yeah. That's the key right there.
Yeah.
So what about you?
Well, for my story, I found in the news, it's close to home. This month's story comes from Cape Cod, Massachusetts, which is a peninsula south of Boston. For those of you unfamiliar with this part of the terrain, Cape Cod Child Development is a 50-year-old nonprofit, and their focus, well, their mission is to provide world-class child and family-focused programs that nurture each child's potential. And what that translates into is they see about 3,000 children a year, and they pioneered the Head Start program. So preschool education, they work with teenage parents, they provide childcare centers. They do a lot of early intervention for families in need. And they've got a relatively new CEO. She comes from the private sector. She's also a nonprofit. But she got her Lean Six Sigma training and certification in the for-profit world. And she decided to bring that training to this nonprofit and to her team and to Cape Cod Childcare Development. So she's already had significant results with cycle time of her accounts receivables. And she's reached out to other local nonprofits. She'd like to, you know, have the rising tide lift all the boats to participate with her. Her goal is to transfer the savings to the child education, to parent experience, to staff satisfaction. And Tracy, truth be told, I have connected with these guys, and I am excited to help them. It's very exciting. It's local. It's nonprofit. It's going to make a big difference in a lot of people's lives. So it's great to see Lean Six Sigma at work in this world.
Oh, that is wonderful to hear, Elizabeth. So I guess that is really shows how Lean Six Sigma and kids intersect. And what kind of, that is great purpose work, right? It feels good probably for you to be helping a nonprofit in this type of application, which just makes us realize, you know, why we do what we do.
Yeah, no, that's a really true statement. I think you and I are both driven to help people, but then I think when you have a mission-driven organization, it's another layer of you're helping people because they're really helping people. So that's a big deal. Thank you.
Yes, very nice. So up next is a little talk about a book. And this is Julia Childs wrote The Joy of Cooking, but today we're talking about a new book, The Joy of Lean. And Elizabeth, I'd love to hear what you consider the key recipes are in this book.
Yeah, it's a fun title. It definitely brings back the book I think I was raised on in terms of how to cook everything. This was written by Dodd Starbird. He runs a firm called Implementation Partners. And this is his second book. And he's blending the lean tools with something he calls engaged team performance. The underlying method he's using are time studies. And the book goes into great detail about how they set these studies up. If you're not familiar, people self-report each task. They give their start and stop times. They use it to figure out average task duration. So they really get a very accurate look at how long it takes to do individual tasks. Ultimately, they use this information and they work with the team to right-size the workforce, which is always can be a scary topic. But throughout, his examples all show that people either get pulled into where they're needed, where there's not enough capacity, or they leave by attrition. So ultimately, you get a super productive workforce. And the focus is how the teams then use the lean tools to change how work is done, right? They find waste in the process, they see a lot of handoffs, and they get engaged in the work, you know, as the title suggests. And a lot of times they go from a departmental view, you know, Tracy, how we constantly see people work in silos, and they actually physically move and get together in these work teams with total line of sight to the customer. So great examples. And he provides detailed data displays, whiteboard examples of, you know, ongoing counts so that teams can see what their status is. Good visual management, visual controls. Each chapter you get a provocative questions for leadership. You know, are you really on this path? Do you really want to change your culture? And then he combines that with quotes from people in the case studies. And these companies, Ecova, Principal Financial, a few others, they're incredibly generous. They're incredibly honest and forthright about what was going on. And he also includes quotes from thought leaders. So there's great bits in there from new people, from people as kind of real stalwarts like Deming. But he gives great recipes for, I would say, seasoned Lean Six Sigma practitioners. But these are some very detailed roadmaps for folks that want to get into this.
Yes, I was able to read the book as well, and I would absolutely agree with you. There's a lot of detailed information on time studies. It's obvious that Dodd has a lot of experience applying this stuff and very successful. And the fact that there is so much information on these case studies that has been shared just talks about the level of trust in the relationship that he's built with these organizations. It's always great to hear success stories and, you know, the challenges that people run into as well with applying Lean and Six Sigma and process improvement, because that's where people learn. That's where we really see other people's challenges and hopefully can learn from them too.
Yeah. Yeah. There was a point where, you know, you got the feeling he wasn't sugarcoating. He acknowledged it doesn't all work. It's not all super successful. Some things are successful and then fall back. So I do like that he's candid. The book is small. Some of the graphics, I felt like I really need to be able to see more because they were such great detail, but it is packed with information. So it's a good one.
Yes. And I'll just add one more kudos about a framework. He talks about a framework for achieving lean culture, and that's really how the book is organized. And I would say it's very much around specifically developing a process-driven culture. So everything he talks about, all those steps are very much about process and how do we build a process-driven culture. And that can really be successful in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Good point. Good book, Joy of Lean. Next up, we've got our special request, a little Q&A from one of our subscribers. Tracy, here's a question for you that just came in. How do you integrate Lean Six Sigma with the balanced scorecard?
Yeah, that's a great question. And for those of you who don't know, the Balanced Scorecard is a book that actually came out by Robert Kaplan, and it really talks about how do you actually measure success for an organization. And it actually basically, instead of just using financial data, it basically says there are really four categories or balanced categories that you should be using to measure success for your organization. And those are categories like financial measures, which has typically been the main measurement category for all businesses. But it says focus on the customer, focus on operations, focus on your employees. So it's not saying anymore, don't just focus on numbers, because you could be doing really well revenue-wise or financially, but your employees have very low morale or your customers are not very happy. And that could be very much a short term. So it's really saying take a balanced approach with how you're growing your organization. So how does Lean Six Sigma apply to that? In my opinion, because you have customers as a category and operations as a category and employees as a category, there could be lots of opportunity with how you want to apply Lean Six Sigma or process improvement to those areas. If you're not doing so great on any of these measures for your balanced scorecard, often you're going to have to apply root cause analysis to find out why those measures aren't performing in the way that you want. And not only does it help drive what process improvement should be working on, it helps to make sure that your efforts for Lean Six Sigma are aligned with strategic goals. But then also you can use these efforts to make things more visual with huddle boards or visual management boards. You can have the balanced scorecard measures on these boards, and then you can show from a continuous improvement perspective how you're doing or what you're working on to try to improve those measures. So that's basically what I think, how they can be integrated together. Do you have any additional thoughts on that, Elizabeth, that I didn't talk to?
I think that idea of a scorecard immediately brings sports to mind. And I love the idea that the scorecard tells you how you're doing, and Lean Six Sigma is where you can mine the method for some plays, right? You're looking for what's the play to work this metric here. You know, how do I use this method, this Lean Six Sigma process, to move the dial, to move the scoreboard in the direction I want to go?
Definitely.
It's my sports analogy. For as good as I am at sports, which amounts to just making analogies, I think, at this point.
All right. Well, coming up next is Elizabeth tells us about today's special. And this is an interview with Dodd Starbird, right?
Yeah. So this is the author of the book we just talked about, Dodd Starbird. was generous with his time, and we got to interview him. He's the author of The Joy of Lean, and he gives some great background, and he shares what he learned. He also made some great references, just like you did, Tracy, to this is what he does in his life, but a lot of the research he did and the work that he did led him into some thought leadership that made him wish he'd done a different job with his kids. And that, I think, is fascinating, listening to him sort of apply it to his own life. But it's a great informative interview. I highly recommend.
Wonderful. I can't wait to hear it.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to today's special. I'm speaking with Dodd Starbird, the managing partner of Implementation Partners, and the author of a new book, The Joy of Lean, Transforming, Leading, and Sustaining a Culture of Engaged Team Performance. So, Dodd, tell us a little bit about yourself and how long you've worked at Implementation Partners.
Hi, Elizabeth. Yeah, I'm Dodd Starbird. I've been at Implementation Partners since 2004. And before that, I did process and performance improvement for Coors Brewing Company and for Johnson & Johnson. And so I've actually been in the industry, gosh, it's almost 20 years now. It's kind of scary.
It is scary because it means other things too, right?
Yeah. I started when I was 12.
Yeah. And that's good to always remind people. So you've got a bit of a pedigree, Dodd. You've got two family members with pages on Wikipedia, and you chose a different path. So how did you get your start in the world of process improvement?
Gosh, so I won't speak to all my family members, but certainly did start process improvement back at Coors Brewing Company. I'm going to say it was 1998 or something like that. And I was privileged to be a part of a rollout of an idea system. So if you remember, some companies still have these things, but we rolled out an idea system. It was called Coors Wins, Winning Ideas, New Solutions. And basically what happened was we started turning in these ideas. And of course, you know, sometimes the classic idea system, people turn in ideas and the concept is just management says no to the ideas and things don't go anywhere. And so one of the things that myself and a couple of other partners did was we started turning in ideas that we were actually doing and completing and then turning in the idea once it was done. And so we got credit for doing those things. And actually, there was financial rewards associated with this. And we capped out twice in the first 3 months or so. Our team got the max payout of $10,000 per idea. So we all split about $20,000 together. And I remember I got called in to the process improvement director's office. And he says, I got good news and bad news for you. The good news is I'm going to promote you and you're going to be our new manager of continuous improvement. And you're going to do Kaizen blitzes, which sounded like a whole bunch of fun. You're going to do Kaizen blitzes for 2 years and we're going to improve processes all over the plants. And I was like, what could possibly be the bad news? He says, the bad news is managers are ineligible for the idea system.
Yeah, there's no money anymore.
No more money.
Well, that's great. I mean, it's you guys were rebels and you recognize that, you know, what's the point of just submitting ideas? Why don't we just make it happen, see what they do? I think there's an expression to that, which is just instead of asking permission, what is it? You apologize later.
Beg forgiveness, yeah. And the great thing about this, if we didn't know any about this. We were doing Kaizen blitzes from an article that we read in a magazine. We didn't know anything about lean. We had to learn it as we went. And this was in the late 90s. But the really cool thing about it was that I got the experience to run a Kaizen every week for 18 months. It was just an amazing experience. And we were trying new stuff and doing it the way, without knowing it, doing it the way that Toyota does. The concept of an A3 right now is not to turn in an idea, it's to turn in a solution. And we didn't know that, but it turned out to be the way to do it.
That's nice. I think that kind of trial by fire is the best ways to learn. Your mistakes are emblazoned and just spur you on to get it right the next time. But what an incredible experience. That's really nice.
Absolutely.
And, you're lucky. So you've written in the past. You've got a great earlier book with Implementation Partners. But what inspired you to write this book? And why did you call it The Joy of Lean?
Great. Well, so absolutely enjoyed writing the previous book too. That one was called Building Engaged Team Performance, and that was 2010. And of course, The Joy of Lean just came out in 2016. But the thing that really sparked my interest here was that if you've grown up in the, I know you have, Elizabeth, too, grown up in the process improvement industry, and for 20 years or longer, we've been always saying it's the process, it's the process. We always have to fix the process. And that's very true. But you know, there's a combination of process and people going on that's so important. And if you look at the books that started it all, look at Lean, look at Womack and Jones, Lean Thinking. They coined the term Lean, and I know others coined it before them, or you can argue where the term came from. But the term was really to orient on waste elimination. The whole concept of Lean is you know, the idea of eliminating waste. Unfortunately, what happened was as that was promulgated through the industry, it became about the process of eliminating waste instead of about creating a culture of waste elimination. If you look at where the books were written about, they were written about Toyota. Toyota had a culture of waste elimination, but it was not necessarily misinterpreted, but oversimplified to say, hey, let's just go streamline processes. And so you've got folks running willy-nilly around for the last 20 years, streamlining processes and getting great results. And then the other thing that really sparked it for me was there was a 2007 article in Business Insider from a guy named Rick Pay. And the article basically was they did a survey, they got a bunch of data, and the article was called Everybody's Jumping on the Lean Bandwagon, but Many Are Being Taken for a Ride. And the idea was that they surveyed how many companies had actually done lean and whether if they had done it, how many said they were achieving their intended results. And 2%, 2 out of 100, 2% of the companies said they were achieving their intended results. And the challenges were all leadership related. They were all related to, you know, the idea that we're streamlining processes, but we're really not changing and creating a sustainable culture. So the idea of the joy of lean is lean can actually be joyful. Business process improvement can be joyful. And a great process can create a great culture, and a great culture can actually be joyful to work in for the employees.
It's such a nice concept, and it's a really good focus, and I know what you're talking about. I've heard it in other terms. People say lean isn't a tools-only approach. You know, it doesn't really work if you're just saying, hey, we removed these steps. Well, who's removing those steps? And are they going to do it again? Is this part of the way they work? And you had it reminds me of a point in your book where there's great results going on in one department. And I forget why the manager left, but he was either moved out or he left. He got another job, went to another division. Something happened, and it was amazing how fast the productivity declined. Everything was in place. It was working great. They had whiteboards for productivity, and things just tumbled and got buried. The backlog grew. They dispensed with a whiteboard, even saying the whiteboard takes too much time. Visual management takes too much time. We can't even do that. It was so sad.
Yeah. We don't have time to count all our work.
And, no.
And the funny part of that story was, well, why don't you have time to count all your work? It's because the backlog ballooned on them, and nobody wanted to say that. So, yeah, absolutely.
But it was a leader dependent. Like, to your point, it hadn't worked through the culture. It was that guy. And when you remove that guy, it was like dominoes.
Yeah, it's funny. I'm with you. I agree with you. There's in that story, there was also another piece to it, which was the people got the culture. But when they removed that guy, actually two of them left at the same time, two leaders in the chain of command left at the same time. And what happened was the people were overruled by a new leader who told them that it was silly to get work done today that wasn't due till next week. Wait till next week to do it. You know, the leader was telling them like anti-lean things to do, and they couldn't fight it.
Yeah. And I think you make that great point. And you bookend the chapters with questions for leaders, because you have been in this obviously for, you know, all these years, and you've seen what depends on leadership, that if you don't support it, that's the kind of thing that happens, regardless of how dedicated those folks were and how much they wanted to support that lean culture. If leadership didn't, then they weren't allowed. So
right.
I get that. So you were generous. Your clients were generous. There's a There's a great running case study through your book with Ecova, much of the book. So it's so helpful. I can appreciate how generous they were with that. But tell me about that company. Why did you include that story?
Well, and I certainly, of course, appreciate all the clients, all the people who were willing to put their name in it. And you're right, that is a big step for a company to agree. They certainly have to make sure that the story casts them in an appropriate light and such. And they were very, Ecova and all the others were very candid. So I really do appreciate their willingness to be included. The cool thing about Ecova was that they implemented so many of the different pieces. And if you look at theory versus reality. The idea of doing this across the board, of streamlining processes and then transforming organizations and then putting measurements in place and turning over empowerment to employees to run their own teams with a leader involved, but the employees manage the daily work. All those concepts kind of have to go together. It's hard to implement part of it and not the other part. But Ecova did a massive transformation of, I'm going to say it was 18 teams that all do a variety of different kinds of work. And they transformed from a functional organization broken into groups of 50 or 100 people that all had different functional roles into groups or teams of 20 people that were cross-functional teams that were customer-facing or customer-oriented. We called them customer-focused teams. And so they not only transformed their processes, but they changed their org design. And they put measures and collaborative norms in place to support the new org design, and then they sustained it for years. Mm-hmm. And so they've been such a great example to show that the steps work, that the steps that we talk about, and I won't read them off to you, but the idea of start with a classic Lean Six Sigma approach to streamlining processes, define and measure and analyze and put in new solutions, new streamlined processes, and put in work controls, but then take it a step further and change your org design and set team goals related to customer-related performance, and then put in collaborative norms to enable the teams to get the most out of their processes, and transition to a customer-focused organization instead of a functional one. And that was that their company went through all those steps.
It's a big deal, and I don't know if it comes through as you describe it, but I feel it so keenly that it's a very big deal for organizations to go to that model to really form these cross-functional teams focused on customers as opposed to functional departments, because departments are easier to manage. It's harder to do, so it's not a natural thing, and you usually get a big fight to go down that road. But those are the biggest transformations I've seen. I saw that in a lot of different industries where things were just ping-ponging to different departments and taking days for each group to do the handoff. And once you pull those folks together into a pod or however it looks, then that's over. Those handoffs are done, and they have intense line of sight to the customer. And it changes not just the org chart, but literally people have to move their bodies. They got to go into different places, you know?
They have to sit next to a different group of people. They have to get along with people that they used to argue with. Yeah, it's a beautiful thing.
Well, that's impressive. That's a really cool one. And I also appreciate, you know, you tell of some great successes. There are great examples of Ecova, Principle. There's some really nice successes, but you don't sugarcoat that there's also failures. So I'm wondering what you didn't include.
Oh gosh, there's what we didn't include. Yeah, that's a tricky one. I don't know that, you know, we obviously have to cast everything in an appropriate light. And so we can't tell stories and name names of people who did horrible things to mess up their organizations.
Come on, Dodd, this would be like a lean gossip site.
Yeah, we could start the story here. Actually, there were a couple of things in it. There was a couple of quotes from a person that I didn't name. And it was funny because she and I actually talked about having her company approve the quotes and put her company's name in there. And she went through the process of doing it, and we actually had the approval. but we decided not to do it anyway because the things she was saying were critical. They were critical of past leadership. And so the quotes are in there, and she's not named, she's anonymous in there, and the company is not named either. But the idea was talking about a leader that came in and started a lean journey and then didn't finish it. For whatever reason. I think in this case, there was part of the quote was about a leader that came in with a vision and then left. And then the other people who implemented it kind of paid lip service to it. They saw it was working, so they played along with it, but they didn't really own it. And so it was kind of bottom up, but not top supported.
Mm. Well done. I mean, it's admirable, because obviously what you want are quotes and permission and be able to show people, hey, this is real, this really happened, and here's where it happened. So I'm impressed. You held back.
We try not to throw anybody under the bus. And certainly it's all from there's always two sides to every story, right? So I'm sure that there are some other and I can think of some here that didn't make it into the book. Other stories from core clients of big departments that went through this kind of transformation and got to the brink of that customer-focused teams thing and said, we'd rather stay functional. And I can think of one right now, 1,000-person team that decided not to go there when they should have.
And I know that is the norm more than not. You know, I've seen it, and it is transformational, and you've seen it, what it can be.
Yeah.
Another thing I appreciated throughout the book, because you really blended the voices of people within the organizations and their experience as you walked us through case studies and the methods. But then you also quoted some other thought leaders, and some of them, you know, that everybody knows, like Deming, and you made a nice history at the back end of a sort of a condensed history of process improvement. But you also mentioned, you know, the author of Mindset and some other folks. And I'm wondering who all influenced you as you sort of pull together your thoughts around this book?
Yeah, it's a wonderful question. I think I have two different groups of influences. I'd say the early influences and the recent influences. So the early ones were folks like Jack Stack, The Great Game of Business, the whole idea of make it measurable and turn it into a game and let the employees own it. And then Belasco and Steyer, who had Flight of the Buffalo, great book about letting employees lead. It's a wonderful one. And then the more recent ones, I'd say three more recent ones. One was Mindset. And honestly, if you haven't read Mindset, go read my book first, but go pick that one up too.
Yeah, really.
Because Mindset changed the way that I talked to my children before I was done reading it. And I sat there thinking, gosh, I wish I'd have read this book 15 years ago. Before my children were, a couple of them were fully grown, because it talks about the idea of everything can be learned, and you shouldn't praise or criticize your children's talents. You should criticize or improve their learning ability. You should focus on what they learned and how hard they tried, as opposed to how good they are at something.
Yeah, the failure's okay.
Yeah, failure's actually a good thing because it taught you something.
Yeah.
Yeah. And another great book that made it, a number of quotes made it in to this book, to The Joy of Lean, was David Marquet's Turn the Ship Around. And Turn the Ship Around is a submarine story. It's a wonderful book about his time in the Navy commanding a submarine. But the beautiful thing about that is it isn't couched in classic lean terms. It doesn't have the words in it. It doesn't have the steps and the approach. But all the things he did end up fitting into the framework. And so, you know, we talk about collaborative norms, for example. There's a number of great examples in his book, and I tried to list some of them in The Joy of Lean, but there's some great examples in his book about collaborative norms that they created, ways of working together that are pieces of their standard work. So he wasn't using the lean words, but it was all in there. It was wonderful to compare that kind of story to our lean framework. Go ahead. No, sorry.
Well, that one I haven't read. I totally agree with you on Mindset. That was a revelation reading that. I haven't read the one you just described, but I love that when you see the crossovers. You see they're using different language, but it's the same stuff, and it just supports what you're doing.
Exactly. And it's a great read too. I mean, it's a great story about improving a submarine. And of course it brings back some of my military background. I went to Army instead of Navy, but I still like those guys. There's only one day a year we fight with them and that's on the football field.
So. It's okay.
Yeah, we're okay with that. And then the last book that was a really big influence, actually influenced my choice of the title too, was a book called Joy Inc. from a person named Rich Sheridan. And I don't know if you know Rich. I've actually worked with him, co-spoke at a couple of presentations and things like that. But Rich is the leader of a company called Menlo Innovations, and they have done just a radical change in what a software company looks like. And the company is entirely designed around engaged employees. And the engaged employees come first, and the processes and customers come next. And it's just a wonderful place to go see. If you ever get a chance to go visit them in Ann Arbor, it's an interesting thing. And again, you see agile and lean all over the place, even though they don't use those words very much there. They have it in there. It's all baked into their culture.
Oh, that's inspiring. That's cool. Well, before I ask you for some stats where people can find you and your book, I want to ask you, is there anything I didn't ask that you want to tell our listeners?
You know, one thing I think is, you know, when we talk about the title of Joy or the Joy of Lean, why Joy? You know, can you know, a question would be, am I serious? Are you kidding me? People don't go to work to be happy. They go to work to make money, and they don't have to be joyful at work. Well, I think they want to. I don't think anybody wants to go to work to go and play Candy Crush or to read a paperback novel while their machine is running. And people don't want that. People want to be engaged at work, and we're doing them a favor if we can help them do that. And we're doing them a disservice if we allow them to just be bored and fritter their lives away while they sit there making money. And if you look at that whole framework of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, a lot, we talk about that a lot, but there are, you know, the Maslow's hierarchy has five layers. And basically the concept is people don't work on the higher layers until they get the bottom layers taken care of. So their physiological needs and their safety needs come first, and then comes belongingness. And then the idea of esteem and then self-actualization. And the cool thing about that is, and this was all shown to me by a person named Rochelle Gagnon from Assumption Life in Canada. While I was in the process of writing the book, she shows me this triangle of Maslow's hierarchy and says, okay, where's pay on this list? Well, it's at the bottom. Pay is physiological and safety. Okay, that's pay, that people work for pay. Where is recognition? You know, we say the holy grail of employee engagement is recognition. Where's that? Well, it's under self-esteem. It's actually the fourth thing on the list. Well, what's the fifth thing? What's the top thing? Well, that's self-actualization. And you don't get self-actualized through recognition. You get self-actualized by wanting to be there and by liking what you're doing. And that's the joy that we're missing at work sometimes. And people really need to find that joy.
That's nice. That's nice, Dad. Nice description. Nice focus. So how can people find you and how can they find your book?
Okay, awesome. Well, of course, you can find me on LinkedIn. That's Dodd Starbird. You can also find my website, which is www.implementationpartners, all one big word, jammedtogether.com. And then the book, The Joy of Lean, is actually easiest to find on Amazon.com. If you just search for the title. And then also, if you're a member of ASQ, you can get a discount. But for some reason, it's sold out on ASQ right now. They must have sold more than they thought they were going to sell. So the place to find it right now is Amazon, and you can get a Kindle version or a hard copy.
Well, that's a classy problem, Dodd. I'm glad to hear the sales are brisk.
It's a good problem to have.
Well, thank you for joining us on today's special request. And thanks, everybody out there, for joining us on the Just in Time Cafe. Please tune in again next month when we'll interview another new author. Thank you, Dodd, and take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Elizabeth.
Well, thanks, Tracy. I'll talk to you at the other side.
Okay, good. I can eat my pasta now, right?
Yes, you saw that it just got delivered, so enjoy your noodles.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us for Just in Time Cafe. Visit goleansixsigma.com/podcast to share your feedback or listen to more podcasts. Also, please subscribe to Just in Time Cafe on iTunes.
Thank you.